There he is.
Shana Tova.
And to you, such a handsome young lad is Dave Shalansky.
Oh, man, I just trimmed my beard, and it's remarkable how much younger I look, and I don't like it.
You don't like looking young? Why?
No, I do look younger, perhaps maybe because I'm older now, and maybe it is better that I look younger, but in a way, I like the distinguished look of, like, you know, the little grays, the tiny little grays sticking out on the chin, my chinny chin chin.
Yes. My younger daughter has gotten to the point now where she will tell me when she thinks it's time for me to trim the beard because she doesn't like the gray.
Mm.
And it's more pronounced the fuller the beard is. So she'll be like, Dad, you look old. Let's go shave it.
I can't wait for Lila to be that age. It's going to be, she's already talking to me that way. Imagine how she's going to be when she's 14.
Oh, it's going to be rough. It's going to be brutal, but it's a good thing.
Wait, remind me, are your daughters bat mitzvahed? Were they bat mitzvahed? Okay. And talk to me about that because I'm debating how we're going to proceed with this.
My girls, given their age, and their age proximity, we ended up doing a b'nai mitzvot where, so my older daughter was about 6 months older than she would have been, and my younger daughter was about 6 months younger than she would have been, and we did them together.
B'nai mitzvot.
Dude, so the girls did their, normally at our temple, each weekend there are two children who do their bar bat mitzvahs
mm-hmm.
at the same time. So my girls took both spots, and they did them together. And so they got to work on it together. They got the challenge with that was the party because they have very different sensibilities and it was during COVID. So that was on the heels of what a lot of kids did around then, which was like driveway bar mitzvah parties.
Oh, interesting. Yeah.
And so we actually got an outdoor space at like a wildlife reservation sort of camp area.
Mm-hmm.
And the girls decided that they wanted a, not surprisingly, summer camp theme. So we did camp brand and they had these, at the space we're at, they had these yurts and we had one yurt that had a bar in it. We moved a bar inside.
Wow.
And so, like, adults could go hang out in there. And the other yurt had some, like, games and things for kids. And then we had a tent set up where there was the DJ and a dance floor on the mm-hmm. ground. So they made, like, mm-hmm. a dance floor. And then we had the caterer was awesome. And he brought these, like, big giant barrels. And it was, like, barbecue. But it was – he had made, like, mac and cheese and grilled cheese and, like, campy-style light food. And we did not make – we did have, like, salmon. But other than that, we didn't have any food, like adult food or kid food. It was just like everybody got the same food. And then we had a fire pit and like a bonfire type situation. And we had a hot chocolate car and a fried dough car.
Oh, my God. That's awesome.
And it was all outdoors and the wet. And they had this long path to get to where we were. And we lit the path. So like because it was at night.
Oh, wow.
And it was really cool. And the girls.
What time of year was it?
October.
Oh, and you lucked out with the weather. I mean,
we got very lucky with the weather.
And I mean, what did you have? Like if it was both daughters and they were inviting their respective classmates, right? And people from camp, et cetera, that must have been like 100 kids.
So, yeah, we were actually limited on how many kids because of COVID. There were restrictions on how many people you could gather at an event. And so
I remember that.
That was
oh
the challenge.
That...
Even though it was outdoors,
right.
we had the challenge of saying, like, between Danielle and I, we have a pretty big collab, you know, like our aggregate family. And then so they count and the four of us count. And the like caterers and the DJ, like they all count towards the total number.
Wow.
So by the time you get to that. And then the girls invited the friends that they wanted to invite. And some of them are mutual friends, but most of them not. By the time you get to all that, it worked out to be like, I don't know, four friends of ours.
Wow. And is that something you had to get, like, sort of approval from the city?
No, I mean, because we didn't go over the limit, whatever the limit was.
Oh, and, interesting. Okay.
We had to get a liquor license because they didn't have, they don't have, like, you had to get a special permit to have alcohol, but uh-huh. Not a liquor license, but they, other than that, we got to take home. I remember we came home that night after it ended, and I went back the next day to pick up like a car full of stuff, like wow. all the decorations and 15 boxes of alcohol that hadn't been used. And
what'd you do with that? Because you don't drink.
Donate it? No, donated it to my wife and to our friends. You know, over the next few months, people drank it. That's in various great. Forms.
And did the girls, did they start Hebrew school like when they were 9 or 8? Or
they did. Okay. Yeah. And they loved it. And when it ended, after they were finished with this event, they have mostly tailed off of Hebrew school. My older daughter is an assistant teacher, though. She still goes like twice a week to be an assistant teacher at the same place, which is great.
And camp doesn't camp. I remember this. Camp helps when the kids are campers are about to be bar mitzvah.
Yeah. So they did. They would meet weekly with someone at camp to go over their Torah portions.
Oh wow. They did this. So they did the whole thing. The Haftorah.
They didn't have a Haftorah, but they did. They each read three portions from the Torah.
And then they ate three portions of the cake.
They ate three each portions of the cake. Yes, that there was that. So it was nice that they got to do it together. And my bar mitzvah was in September. And so I had a similar having been at camp. It's tricky because you're in your camp. The last thing you want to do is like go study like that. But they did it. They had a great teacher at camp and outside of camp, and they practiced hard, and then they didn't know what to do about the gifts. I mean, they did, other than the thank yous and things like that. It's like you get some money a kid, and my wife and I had to come up with a pretty good, what we think is a pretty reasonable plan for giving them that money,
right,
so that they don't just go spend it all.
So the people, I'm assuming, because it was, I'm assuming this was 2020, right? This was October 2020.
Yes.
So we're in the thick of the COVID, where we are sort of, we are sort of on the line of vaccinations. So there's four kids that are invited, but like, did people, I'm sure other classmates and people.
Oh, no, four of our friends, Danielle and my friends, plenty of kids.
Oh, okay.
Yeah.
You gotta have the kids there.
The kids are the best part. They had the best time.
I have a quick little story about my bar mitzvah, which is very sort of sad in a way. There is no record other than sort of, you know, the physical paper of me being bar mitzvahed.
Really?
There's no visual record of it because the photographer, and this is, I dare say, in the 80s, but we've talked a lot about age on the show. It was a long time ago. So there's no digital cameras. There's no phones. There's a person with a film camera with no, you know, where you go and develop the film.
Yeah.
So he was hired, or she was hired, I don't know, there shooting. No videographer. My parents opted not to do that, which is cool, which is fine. But every photo but one was overexposed.
Oh,
every
no.
single. We don't know how. We don't know if the jerk face like accidentally spilled like water on them. There's, I don't know. But the claim was it was overexposed, and there's no. And of course, we didn't pay for it.
Right.
But it was what a shock to the, especially more to my parents than anything else.
I'm sure.
And there's the one photo is just of me like up on the bima, which is like where the Jewish kids stand or where the rabbi and the cantor are. And it's just me standing there with the rabbi and I think my mom and dad. I can't even remember. And it's very painful if you ever ask my mom that story. She's just like, her eyes turn red.
Oh, I will ask her when she is a guest with my mother.
We have to get that on. We have to have that happen very soon.
Yeah, we can do that. They would be, my mother, I think we might have to trick into doing it. I'll just send her a link and say like, click this and she'll just show up. And I think our guests.
What is this, Matt? What am I doing? I thought we were talking about dinner.
Yeah, what are we talking about? Jordan's Furniture? Our guest today, I think, could second the reaction. He knows my mother, and we could get his mother to do this too. She would be a hoot.
That would be great.
Yeah.
Now, you know Alex how?
So Alex, who is in the waiting room, Alex is, and why don't I bring him in?
Because he's,
a professional.
And when they're in the waiting room, are they? Could they hear? Can
they
hear
us? Yeah, they can hear us. Yeah.
Hi, Alex. How you doing?
Let me bring him in. So he can hear
us.
Hi,
Alex. How are you?
There he is.
Hi, Alex. Yeah. Oh, look, he's wearing a blazer.
He's probably going to be on television later.
Matt, I am afterward. Can you just do your mom through the imitation of your mom throughout the podcast? Yeah,
sure.
It's very good.
Yeah. Well, listen, you little stinker. That's probably where it would start, something like that. Did I just call you an asshole? Something that's what you might say, something like that. Alex and I think are we'll get to it. Alex's mother and my mother are first cousins, which makes Alex and I think second cousins thrice removed. I don't know. What does it make us?
No, it just makes you
second cousins.
Is it second cousins or first cousins once removed? No, it's not that.
No,
I think
one
it's second
knows.
Cousins. Second cousins.
The smartest people on the planet don't know how to define. It's
no idea.
We don't.
Well, that's 2/3 of us.
Dave, Alex and I are what I like to refer to as like wedding and funeral cousins. Where that's we only and podcast.
Well, you can add one to it now.
Yeah, podcast. Right. Yeah, we see each other at the big events.
Exactly.
And or if I'm watching
bar mitzvahs, you can add that one.
How many of those are there?
Not many. I mean, I remember yours.
Dave, Alex.
This is funny.
Tell what is your recollection?
I was like four or something.
Yeah. All right, asshole. What is your what is your recollection of what I consider to be the greatest bar mitzvah entrance in the history of bar mitzvahs? Do you remember my entrance?
I mean, now that you bring up your entrance, I remember it being a big deal, but like, no, I don't remember it in the specifics.
By the way, that statement, Matt, that question that you just posed to Alex was the most egocentric.
Yeah.
Can I ask you a question?
Yes, please.
At your sister's bat mitzvah.
Yes.
Did she have a Michael Jackson impersonator?
So now you're an even bigger asshole because she's older than me, which means you were like one. And
yes.
You still remember that.
One of my earliest memories. Yeah. So I was maybe three, I'm going to say.
She had a Michael Jackson impersonator. And I remember the video of this. She was mortified. It was a surprise. My parents surprised her in the middle of the dancing with this dude who was supposed to look like Michael Jackson but did not, with the glove and everything.
Yeah.
And she was in those prime teenage, 13-year-old years, and she was mortified.
Oh my
God.
It was tremendous.
Well, it was meaningful to me. So.
Yeah, well, that's that. Because were you a Michael Jackson fan?
I mean, as much as like a 4-year-old,
yeah,
you won, sure.
Yeah. Dave, my entrance, and Alex, it'll all come back to you, was like, Dave, this is Alex, by the way.
Hi, Alex.
Alex Sherman,
hi,
everybody.
Dave.
Alex Sherman. My entrance, my theme was magic.
So I remember that. That was the
yes,
next question I had.
Of course.
And in fact, did you do some magic during the...
I was part of some magic.
Yes, part. That's right.
He magically became a man.
Dave, there is video of this. Here's what happened.
Rub it in, Matt.
Yeah, no. Dave, Alex, before you arrived, Dave was talking about how at his bar mitzvah, which was back in the 1940s or something like that, there were photographs taken, but they were all overexposed. So there's no, except for one photo.
Allegedly. Allegedly.
One photo. So my service was in the big temple, in the big hall.
And in Natick.
In Peabody.
Peabody.
And then everybody went downstairs for cocktail hour. And while that was happening, they set up the same room for the party. Mm-hmm. Okay. As people came into the party, in the middle of the dance floor was one of those classic-looking magic boxes.
Yep. I remember all
this part you remember, right? The glass front, and all the people are coming in, and they're sitting down, and it's lovely. They get to the introductions where they're going to introduce the mother and the father and the sister and then the bar mitzvah boy. And they go to, everybody comes out, and they run on the dance floor and is waving, and it's awkward. And when I had to do this with my daughters, it was, like, just as awkward. All these things happen. Then they introduce me, and they can't find me. And so, like, my dad thinks, like, I must be in the bathroom, you know, something along these lines. Whatever. They can't find me. And so they decide, my mother decides, they'll just do the magic. There was a magician that she had hired. They'll do a magic show. So the magician comes out, two of them. They come out, a man and a woman, and they're doing this silk handkerchief kind of thing, and they turn that into a rabbit, and then they turn the rabbit into something else. Then they put, or they turn it into a bird, and they put the bird into a rabbit. Then they put the rabbit in the box in the middle of the dance floor, and then they pull the top off of the box, and I'm standing there in the middle of the dance floor.
Amazing.
So I don't want to spoil magic. This is not Penn and Teller. However, what people should know is, and Alex might remember, I was tiny, A. B, I was in the box, when you think about it, the entire time while the Alta Cacas were walking in to the hall. So, like, for the 45 minutes that it took them to migrate from the downstairs to the upstairs to find their tables, I was crouched in the box.
So, I don't, you didn't tell your parents?
No, that you were doing Alex, this? Come on, you're on tele, of course, there was a whole thing was a gag. There was a whole thing.
Oh, so they did know.
Yeah, everybody knew this was the whole thing. They're going to pretend. Someone came up with this shtick that they would pretend that they couldn't find me. But I'm sitting in what had to have been the tiniest little crevice in the back of this box. And we had practiced it before. And they're like, you're just going to get into the shoebox type space in a suit, crouched. And when we say go, or one, two, three, whatever the hell it was, you're going to pop out as if you're a jack in the box.
Yes, I do remember this.
Like, and I would say 45 minutes to an hour. And I could hear people as they were walking past. They're like, oh, the decorations. They're so nice. And it's just, I'm in this box with the wrinkly suit now. But it was a great entrance.
No panic, no sort of anxiety being in there, sweating. You're in your suit.
I was in my suit. And I think that because I was so small, it was like easy to jam me in that box. I don't think, about like when you see a magic show on TV, like they wheel out the box about 30 seconds before someone comes out of it.
Right.
I was in that thing for an hour, and they, like, I just think that would probably be considered child abuse at this point.
Yeah, I was thinking the same thing, and luckily you're alive to tell the story.
Yeah, with no claustrophobia issues or you know, anxiety around tiny spaces.
Not yet.
Nope, but, you know, there's still time.
That's a great, lots of bar mitzvah stories. We have a Rabbi Shalansky. I don't know where that came from. Alex Sherman, I was reading your CV. And I'm at my brother's in Providence right now, and we're sitting with my niece who just graduated Northwestern.
Mazel tov.
I know Alex is you went to a lot of school.
Yeah, I packed a lot of schooling in a short amount of time. But I went to graduate school at Northwestern for journalism, so that was actually just a 1-year program, which is why it seems like I packed a lot of school into a short amount of time. It is a quick and dirty 12-month master's program, 9 months of which are in Chicago and the last 3 months in Washington, D.C. I then got my MBA when I was working at Bloomberg. So I did that at night. So that took me like 3.5 years. I got engaged, married, moved out of New York, bought a house in Princeton, New Jersey, and had my first son all while getting that MBA at night and working at Bloomberg. So that was a
wow. You are married to a superhuman.
Well, so she at the time was a lawyer at a huge firm called Sullivan and Cromwell, and I think part of why we matched so well as a couple was I was doing this MBA at night and then and working, and like on the weekends I had to like, you know, do projects, and she was working until midnight over and over again at this huge firm. So it was like our schedules matched. Like we just had no time for anyone else. So it was, you know, it was a good fit. Like there was no expectation of the other person about like, you know, why can't you hang out with me? It's like, no, like we're both just too busy for everyone else and like mildly too busy for each other.
Yeah, that's a power couple for you.
How many, wait, Alex, tell everybody how many kids you have?
3 kids, all boys, 9, 7, and 3.
Wow.
So even that, like perfectly spaced out. Everything is perfectly planned. How many more degrees do you think you'll be achieving?
Matt, I don't know if you've been studying math lately, but 9, 7, and 3 is not perfect.
But it's close.
Yeah, I mean, there will be no more children barring a horrific accident, and there will be no more degrees barring a horrific accident.
Well, I think there's at least one more degree in your future. I don't know what it's going to be, but like I think you can collect them all. It's like Pokemon. Keep going.
Right, exactly, yeah.
Get more
an honorary degree. Maybe
that's right.
And you're in Princeton now, Alex? You're in Princeton now?
Princeton now, yes.
So there's 2 New Jerseyans and 1 masshole on this podcast
Alex
right now.
Alex is a masshole by birth. So.
Yeah. Okay. First 22 years of my life in Massachusetts.
Are you a Patriots fan?
I'm not, which is a family shame.
Yeah,
but I have never rooted for the Boston sports teams. I mean,
neither have I, being from Rhode Island. You are sorry. Go ahead.
A huge San Francisco 49ers fan, and I have been since I was 6 years old.
Yeah, Emmitt Smith.
No, that's Dallas Cowboys.
That's Dallas Cowboys.
Right.
That's,
I mean, the wide receiver.
He was the enemy. Jerry Rice.
I'm sorry, monosyllabic last name. Take 2. Jerry Rice.
Had you said Alex Smith?
Joe Montana.
Alex Smith would have been accurate, but weird.
John Riggins was not on the San Francisco 49ers.
Isn't that from Friday Night Lights?
But is a football player, or was a football player.
Alex Sherman, did you go to summer camp?
Oh, yeah, we can talk about this. I did go to summer camp. I went to 1 year of so let me back up a little bit. Another memory of mine is that both Matt and Corey, his sisters, sort of pushed the idea of Jewish summer camp on me as sleepaway campuses, as something that the two of them really enjoyed. And so I should do it, too. The camp that I ultimately went to was a camp called Bowercrest, which is in northern Massachusetts.
Yeah.
Remind me of the one you guys went to.
Tevye.
Well, I went to Natticook and became a counselor at Tevye, where I met Matt.
Right.
So I grew up with Matt, like having these sort of like glorious tales about camp and all these friends and so forth. And so I went, I think, a little too late. Like all the friends had been made by the time I went to Bowercrest. I was probably 12, I think.
And Bowercrest is an all boys camp with a lot
all
of
boys
focus on sports.
And a huge focus on sports. And I hated it. It was one of the worst experiences that I had had. My parents sent me, I think, to kind of toughen me up to some degree. And like it did do that, definitely. Like I got a little calloused from the fact that all of these people had these existing friendships, and I just kind of was this person that didn't really fit. And everyone was really into Color War, and they all knew these songs, but nobody taught me the songs. And they would all stand on the tables at like in the dining hall, and they would scream out these chants and things. And I just remember being like, what the fuck is going on? Like, no one said it. No one explained anything to me. And so I wish that I had the letters that I wrote home to my parents being like, get me out of here. Like, this is horrible.
That can be arranged. Your mother definitely has those letters.
I've asked her. She can't find them. So she did tell me that she kept them, but we have been unable to find them. So I'm hoping that one day somehow I'm able to get them back, because I would love to reread them. But
we could.
Anyways, that's your answer.
Recreate it.
That said, I went to summer camp my whole life and went to many like day camps and, you know,
well,
really enjoyed that. But, Yeah.
And Alex, with your pedigree, sorry if that's patronizing sort of description of what you've accomplished. What were you doing every summer? Were you like, were you before that year preceding that summer? Were you like chess camp? Chess
nerd alert.
There was one or two.
Were you just reading books?
That I went to a camp that had chess. No, it was almost all sports camps that I did.
Okay.
As a kid, basketball camp, tennis camp, golf camp, and then there was a day camp that I went to that kind of, you know, was like your general, like what you probably have in mind is a day camp, swimming and right. and arts and crafts, and you know, that I went to for like 5 years. So that's what I did. Right. So,
oh, yeah. that's great.
Do your kids? Is there camp for the kids?
Yeah. So all three of them went to the camp for a couple of weeks. Even the 3 year old, which is like the earliest he can go. The other two went for the full 8 weeks, and that is like even more of a generic day camp that you can think of. They have, you know, stream walking and fishing and horseback riding, and New Jersey does it well. Like, this place really has the camp thing down. So this is the third year that my two older ones have gone there.
That's a day camp, right?
Day camp, yeah. My experience with overnight camp has scarred me a little bit. So right, I definitely right. We have friends that are already sending their 9 year olds to sleepaway camp. But my hook on that is sort of like, unless he's asking for it, like I don't have anything to push on him. Unlike right. I'm sure these other parents that have phenomenal summer camp overnight sleepaway experiences, I don't have that. So
Dave is getting ready to do it. Dave is getting ready to do it for his daughter for the first time.
Yeah. And speaking about, we just got the registration process going. It's on Monday. It's due.
It's very exciting.
The application. We're nervous and excited and, you know, looking forward to the future. It's going to be incredible. I said this previously. I don't know what I'm going to do with just my wife in the apartment we live in. It's going to be interesting. Maybe I'll go on long walks by the beach, yes. barefoot,
and fish.
Yeah.
Alex, can we talk about your career a little bit?
Yeah, sure.
So tell everybody a little bit about what you do now, because I want to briefly, at least somewhat, talk about the Disney article story, but great. Generally,
I'm a reporter. I cover the media and entertainment industry for CNBC. Before I've been at CNBC for about 5.5 years. I was at Bloomberg as a reporter for almost a decade before that. And that's
Mike. How's Mike doing?
My interactions with Mike have largely been in the Bloomberg men's rooms.
Let's hear a story on that.
Right.
Do they have a special size? Sorry if he's listening, but do they have a special sized urinal for Michael?
Yeah, he has a gold urinal.
And it's 2 feet off the ground.
Right. Yeah.
I think
exactly.
We just got our episode title. By the
sorry.
Way.
No, actually.
Mike, sorry to interrupt. Sorry to interrupt. That.
He's you know, a man of the people, and he sits with everybody. He doesn't have his own office. He just had a desk right on the floor, so you would just walk by him a lot. But I didn't get to know him particularly well, I must say. But yeah, so I cover Netflix and Disney and Warner Media, NBC Universal, Paramount, WWE, all sorts of media and entertainment companies. And since I work for CNBC, it's largely sort of the business of media. That's my job.
Do you, it's weird. I don't think you cover new and upcoming podcasts, do you?
Well, I mean, I haven't yet, but like, there's always time.
Okay, good.
Yeah.
Yeah, this because I can think of like one podcast in particular that could use the attention.
I mean, I can definitely, you know, write, I think, a solid 1,000 words on the revenue profile of Dad Pod and
there
the
you
various
go.
Different, you know, you revenue streams you guys have coming in.
Speaking of 1,000 words, how many words was Disney's Wildest Ride, the Iger Chapek and the making of an epic succession mess? Because that's more than 1,000.
It was 12,090 words, by far the longest thing I've ever written.
How long did it take? I read it. It's a great, I mean, it's a great story. Like, it should be a book. As I was reading, I'm like, this is really like a book, not in a good way.
Yeah.
Like, it's a, like such a compelling story. But like, how long did that take to work? What does it go into? We've had some actors on here and directors, and we talked about sort of that process, but not really about that, like journalism. Like how, what goes into a story like that?
So I had the initial idea for the story all the way back in January. And in fact, that was sort of when I initially started making calls on it. So Bob Chapek, the former CEO of Disney, was fired in late November of 2022. And then December rolled around and, you know, I figured I would give him a little time and I went on vacation for a couple of weeks, came back in January and then kind of reached out to someone that knew him and said, you know, hey, I'm interested in like trying to get his side of the story. And that person connected me with a communications representative that Chapek had hired. And so then I started speaking to her and like, that was the jump start of this story. And then I worked, you know, probably over the course of 4 or 5 months. There was a little gap in between there. And then I sort of returned to the story where I started talking to people that were either past or present Disney executives about their experience kind of living through 2020 to 2022 when Chapek was the CEO, because when Chapek was fired, I felt like the story of why he was fired had not really been told. Like there had been some reporting, but it didn't add up to me. Like it was sort of pinned on this one bad quarter that Disney had, but Chapek's contract had been renewed 4 months prior to that. And so like, it didn't really add up that just one bad quarter would lead to the CEO of Disney being fired. And yes, he had definitely had some missteps that had been documented before that, but it all didn't quite add up to me. So that's why I was pursuing the story. And then it became kind of my sole focus for like 3 months. And fortunately, you know, CNBC knew what the story was. And at that point, I knew this was going to be a big story. So they, you know, allowed me to focus on this and kind of provided me the leeway to do this. And, it, you know, there were a lot of people in the end that were involved. We hired a freelance editor that wasn't even on staff for it. Wow. A couple weeks I was in Vermont. They sent a camera crew up to Vermont so we could do a digital video associated with it. We sort of got the promotion and marketing behind it, because this is by far not only the longest thing I've ever written, but the longest thing ever written for CNBC.com. It's not like CNBC does long form journalism. So this was sort of our maiden voyage as a company. So, you know, I think there was a lot of excitement internally about it just because it was the first time for this. And also everybody likes Disney, and this was a story of corporate dysfunction and interesting details. So, you know, in the end, I hope people listening to this will read it and enjoy it.
Yeah, we'll put the link in the show notes. It's a great story. I think there are a number of things that I liked about it, but the thing, oddly enough, that stuck out to me was the part where I forget exactly all the details, but the Chapek came back with a beard because they thought it would humanize him, or
yes,
it would humanize him.
Yes.
Just growing a beard.
yes, a post-pandemic beard. And he had colleagues around him that advised him to keep the beard because it would humanize him, particularly with the Disney creatives who felt like he was sort of a, you know, automaton MBA business lingo spewing executive. He kept the beard.
So how has there been any backlash? Does anybody, any sort of negative anything about it since it came out for you?
I must say on this one, the feedback has been pretty much across the board positive. I think there's one person on Twitter that I think is like a Disney investor or something. And so this like random person who I don't know who he is, he hides behind not his real name. He always harasses me every single time I write something about Disney with an invented story that, because I'm a CNBC employee and work for NBC, I'm like out to get Disney. This person doesn't really understand the job of media reporter, which is like my job is to cover all of these companies. And I'm just trying to write like interesting stories. But other than his persistent harassment on Twitter, I think it's been by and large very positive feedback. And even the people that are involved in the story that I've heard from, have said basically like, you know, look, we appreciate the time you put into this and think it was fair. And, you know, so that's always what I'm doing.
They just announced the newest contestants on like Dancing with the Stars. which we used to be big fans of, but now I don't recognize any of these names. They're all people who are like reality show and content creator types because they're not aiming for me anymore.
Yeah. The only celebrities my kids are interested in are YouTube celebrities.
Right.
So they're just unknown people to me.
My girls for a long time were watching videos of people putting makeup on.
Yeah. Yeah. My 3-year-old really likes the unboxing toy videos. He's thrilled with those. Yeah.
We have an ongoing joke, and I don't know if this happens in your house and maybe not in yours, Dave, where like I will see my girls like messing around on their phones or like FaceTiming with their friends or something like that. And I'll like creep in behind them and I'll be like, "Hey guys, it's Matt. We're here today opening," because every one of those videos starts with like, "Hey guys."
Totally.
Dad, go away. I'm on the phone.
My kids want a YouTube channel. They want me to do that for them.
Hey guys, so it's Alex. Say,
"What is up, guys?" Like that both
my dad and with like a camera that moves all over the place.
Exactly. Yeah.
You should try Alex.
Last summer, Lila was 7, and we were walking to the camp bus. She was walking to the camp bus, and she says, "Dad," this out of the blue, "Dad, how many followers do I need to become a celebrity?" My mind exploded.
Yeah.
I was like, where the vocabulary, she'll say 5 words to me, like, you know, more, please.
That's one word.
I need to go poopy. And how many followers do I need to become a celebrity?
Yeah.
And now it's all about being rich. And now this is where it's going to be a problem, because now she's 8 and she's starting to think about like the monetary aspect.
Well, so, like,
seeing these YouTubers like living in like Santa Clarita or something with some massive mansion, they don't even have enough money to fill it with furniture. And they're like, they have slides in their backyards. What 9-year-old's not going to want that?
Right.
It's like, watch us turn $1 into $1 million, like through a series of orchestrated trades, you know? Or it was like, you know, these are like we'll show you what a $1 million plane ride looks like. Or, how many Bugattis can we buy for? So it's like, oh, my kids have this really warped vision, because they always hound me. They're like, "Why do you drive a Nissan? Like, what? Like, can you get like a Lamborghini or a Bugatti?" Like, maybe all kids say that, but the persistence that they say it, because the stuff is like thrown at them on YouTube, I think, is much more unusual than any child would have said it. You know, era or your era.
We did the same thing, like same phase, where they would be like, "Dad, how much do you think that person? How much money do you think that person has?" I'm like, I don't know. Like, we were the other day, I bought a Powerball ticket, which I don't normally do, but I was with my brother-in-law and he's like, "We should get a few." And I'm like, "Why do I need to get a few? If you win $500 million, you're going to throw me a couple million and we'll be fine." But all right. Like, I got one, and I said to the girls, "Listen, we're going to win the Powerball tonight and we're going to have $520 million, but don't worry. We're going to do the lump sum. And so we're going to, after it, only have about $300 million. And my younger daughter said to me, "Dad, if you win the Powerball, can I have like, can I have like $500,000? And I was like, "Deal." Terrible negotiating, but yeah, no concept of the money. So I did not win, by the way. So anyway, yeah, the money thing is,
if you had one, I mean, that would have been burying the lead.
Yeah, that would be an hour.
I would assume if you won, we would all be probably in some sort of sound booth right now with microphones.
Bora Bora. You better believe it.
Bora Bora.
Yeah.
Not needing to do anything other than...
That's what would happen. The YouTube thing is quite fascinating, and the "Hey guys" thing is... They are aware enough of how silly it is that when I do that, it annoys them. So they get the joke. But it doesn't stop it. Nothing will stop that train.
I also feel that as an ex-teacher, potential with becoming a teacher again, and at the college level, it's also training brain. And we're delving into something a huge subject here. But these 18-year-olds would come into college, and I would have a first day. I would show a movie or a scene from a, you know, I would teach acting. And I would just have a screen in the room, like a widescreen television. Like, and it would be on with like the screensaver just going like in, you know, that episode of like The Office where it's like, you know, it's moving. Yeah. But nothing's there. And it's just blue. It's just, you know, you just have to press play on the computer and all of a sudden you're going to see a scene from The Godfather or something like that. And nobody was listening to me. No, nobody. Maybe 80% of the students were just staring at an empty screen because it's there. And that's the problem, I think, that's going to start being, it's already there. It's not going to be. It's already there that we're attached to these things. And I was, it was just seeping into a classroom and I had to turn it off. And yeah. Sometimes even when it was off, it was like they're telepathically trying to turn it back on by staring at it.
Right. If you stare long enough, like, and Dave, you're like, my eyes are up here. Right.
my friend in Brooklyn, who I met in LA, he's a very successful sort of tech company. And he was explaining to me, maybe this is already out there. I'm not sure, but he was working on this project this is pre-COVID, where your screens, there's so many online degrees now that there's some, you know, thousands and thousands, maybe millions of people by this point are like University of Phoenix, whatever, they're at home and they're getting their degree. But their camera will be dinging in the professor that like, Dave Shalansky is actually not paying attention. His eyes have not looked at the screen in 37 seconds or et cetera, et cetera. I think that's probably out there. I don't know. But I think it's really cool. And they're using that apparently with Netflix as well, with just the thumbnails of movies. Like Matt's Netflix thumbnails will be a different logo than mine based off of what I've clicked on in the past.
Right.
It's incredible. And now they're also watching your eyes where your eyes are sort of navigating towards. If it's like a person in a bikini, your eyes are gravitating towards that. We're going to have more of the female lead from the movie in the thumbnail, so you can click on this. Oh, man.
Yeah, it's frightening. My wife's car does it while we're driving. It will give... we were driving to New York recently, and on it, I'm a pretty attentive driver, but there was like an alert that said at one point like that maybe you should pull over. Like it was like basically asking if I was tired. And like, what have I done? I'm just like staring straight. But it's like detecting whether it's that the car is moving or the speed is changing in little tiny ways or, you know, whatever. It's everyone's, this sort of like attention metric is, I think, an evolving science right now. And it must be, Alex, with you and your business, like how people consume, like your story that it is on a website and... you did like a video piece on it too, right?
But yep.
Like, how is that the way that people are going to, we used to get newspapers, right? Then this whole thing happened. Like, what is the way that we're going to ultimately consume, or the next way that we're going to consume information like that? Because it's probably not the web.
I agree. I mean, I'm not really sure anybody has the aim, but certainly we seemed for a little bit to be moving in a generation of augmented reality and virtual reality and the metaverse. And like, would that take over as sort of the next dominant form of content in general? Like we'll all be living in this, you know, second world, whether that's layering on top another world over our actual world or actually putting on a full head covering device and living in that world. I think the brakes have been pulled on that a little bit, so I don't know that we're as much of a, you know, freight train ahead to that world. So I don't see anything on the near-term horizon that's going to completely alter content intake, sort of. Like, I would assume people will still be reading for a while and it will still be on a screen. But certainly, there's no question, going back to the Netflix point, that I absolutely think we're entering a world where content creation is based on these things like attention rather than the art of it. In other words, if Netflix has data that you're staring at one character, it's not just that the thumbnail is going to be that character. It's also going to be, oh, we should create a video game about that character. Oh, we should create a spinoff about that character. Like, there's no question that that's going to be the genesis of new content creation is going to come from their data rather than some human being's brain.
Yeah, I mean, we're living in a Black Mirror episode.
Yeah, no question. I mean, the distance between Black Mirror and reality, I think, you know, gets smaller and smaller as the years go by.
It's for Dave. Have you ever watched any Black Mirror?
Yeah, I watched the episode. I was getting my hair cut, and my guy was like, "You gotta check out the one where they talk about AI." And I'm like, and it just hooks you in immediately. And if the fact that they're autonomous, you don't have to watch from the beginning.
This anthology series is really wonderful.
Anthology is probably
better. It's so good. So, some of the episodes are just so
no. I'm going to be on one. I'm going to be on one hopefully soon. When this strike is over, maybe.
Oh, I like that idea. If can Alex and I be on one too?
Yeah.
If you didn't bring enough acting for everybody, then
that's right.
We can't have it.
I know. No, I got. I gotta watch more.
Cross my fingers. I hope that the Disney story is turned into a series. That I'm in the infant stages of that right now. But
really,
once the strike, yep.
Do you need somebody to play either Bob Chapek or Bob Iger?
I mean, I assume I would need someone to play every character.
One person show, yeah. One person series.
I would like That's to right. be in it. Yeah. Can I be in it? I want to be in it, but not one of the Bobs. Dave,
you're
could be
already
a Bob.
In Frasier. You're already you're right. you're
Dave
you're
could
poaching,
be a Bob.
You're poaching my entertainment friends.
That's right. Dave could definitely be one of the Bobs.
Yeah, definitely. I think, or maybe sure. both. Yeah.
I think though you'd have to come up with a better name than the Bobs, which. I don't think is as smart a title as the or as serious a title as the story sort of implied. It is sort of amazing that there hasn't been because Disney would be the ones to put it out. There isn't it's too soon, I guess, this particular story. But
yeah, so, I mean, look, the fact that it's about Disney like cuts both ways, right? Like, I think there's a lot of interest in the Hollywood entertainment community about doing it because they know it. On the other hand, it's like. Do we really want to make a series about Bob Iger when he's still the CEO of Disney? So, like, we'll see. Like I said, very, very early preliminary stages of that. So we'll see where it goes.
Well, yeah. I'll play Eisner.
Yeah.
Or I'll play Walt Disney himself.
Ooh.
And come back as a ghost.
Yeah.
And we can sort of incorporate that story, and we can make it a holiday series because yep. when you make a holiday series or special or movie, that's just the gift that keeps on giving, Alex.
That's true. You're right. Christmas
can I be Donald episode. Duck and no one would see my face? Just like you will know that I'm there in the background. Hey, that's Donald Duck. It walks. That Donald Duck has like a gait just like Matt. It's probably him. And I'll say yes. I'm going to say that no matter what. I'm going to just say it was me.
It should be said that Disney does still help me pay the rent, as it were, from the shows that I've worked on. So I am a proponent of the network and of the,
I love
the
Disney.
Industry and the company.
Listen, let's talk about Disney in a good way. I mean, this is all good. I don't think the article has anything bad to say about Disney, by the way. Disney is sort of a...
No, that's what I said. It was a very objective perspective. It's very balanced and very well written, by the way. Thank you.
Have you been to Disney World with your children?
I have, but multiple times now.
Dave, have you?
No.
No.
She has no interest. Lila has no interest. Man.
Oh, my kids didn't have a huge interest, but I have a huge interest. And so I'm like, we're going to Disney.
Well, it was that. We were thinking about a cruise. But I think when I looked at the numbers, I was like, there's no way we can handle that.
Yeah. It's so just when we go, we actually only go to the parks for like 2 days max. Right. So we may go for 5 or 6 days to Orlando, and then, you know, we do the Disney Boardwalk one day, which is free.
Yeah.
Like we'll stay at like the resort we stay at. We have stayed at the Disney resorts before, but even when we stay there, it's usually just for 2 nights, and then we go elsewhere for the other few nights because it can get really expensive unless you're like a Disney Club member or
unless
whatever
you're
that
Bob Chapek.
Or you're Bob Chapek. Yeah. But my older one loves. Like favorite thing is roller coasters. So he has been too small to ride the big ones. I think this year he finally passed 4'6", which is what you need to be to ride the more intense ones.
Tron, the new Tron roller
coaster. Tron. So we are going back in December.
Oh my God, bring me. I love it.
Yeah.
Did you in February of this of 2023, we went to Orlando, the four of us and my parents and my sister's family, and but most of the people there are over they're not interested in the parks. We went and stayed at Margaritaville, which was lovely, in like a townhouse. It was really beautiful and awesome. They sat at the pool and they did TikToks and all this stuff. But there was one day where I said, because I'm a big Star Wars fan, I said, I want to go to Hollywood Studios and see the new Star Wars stuff, that whole new Galaxy's Edge thing. And does anybody want to go with me? And at first, crickets. I'm like, that's fine. Fuck it. I'm going myself. If no one, I will go myself. And then my mother was like, well, I'd like to go with you. So she came with me. And then my nephew was like, oh, okay, I guess I'll go too. So the three of us, while everybody else sat at the pool, went to the Galaxy's Edge. Have you been?
I have not. No.
Next time you're down there, whether you're a Star Wars fan or not, there's this ride called the Rise of the Resistance that is the most incredible ride entertainment experience I have ever been part of. Yeah, so awesome.
I've heard my friend said the same thing. He went with his kids. He had three kids.
It blew me away. The technology, when I got off the ride, I had to immediately, of course, go to YouTube to be like, how the hell did they do that? There's like magic in that thing that like you would not believe that you are witnessing. It's incredible.
Can you just back up a little bit? You brushed right by it, but I want to make sure I understand it. You said your daughters were doing TikToks. Are they making TikToks or are they watching TikTok?
Both.
They're making it. And so what are your daughters like? Are they doing dance videos or what are they doing
exactly? Hey guys, we're going to do this dance video. Yeah, they do dances a lot of times, but a lot of what seems to be cool on TikTok now is like playing clips from shows and then lip syncing them. Like there's this conversation on Friends and it's like the five friends and they're, but instead of the five friends, it's like my daughter and four of her friends. And they're like,
so who is editing that video?
They are.
Okay. Yeah. Very user friendly in terms of that.
They know how to do more on a screen with no keys than any, like, and I've done a few of them with them and they're like, dad, you got to stand here on three. And then like, stay still. Now I'm going to move the camera. We'll do it again. Like the other day, my daughter cleaned her room. Mazel tov. And afterwards she disappeared into her room for an hour. When she was finished, she sent us a time-lapse video that she made of herself cleaning her room. And like, what, with that had the phone moving all over the place. She produced this whole, like, I think it's going to be fun while I clean my room to produce this time-lapse.
Dave, how old is your daughter?
She just turned 8 in May.
Okay. So Matt, this question is more for you then.
Okay.
At what age did your daughters get phones?
So my older daughter got her phone when she was 12. And the younger one got it a little bit. Because they're only a year apart, it's sort of really hard to say, like, you're going to wait another year. So it was a couple months after that. But not – and we waited as long as we could.
Okay.
Until all of their friends, we were sort of like last.
Gotcha. That was my question.
It's really hard once, like, no one wants to be the first one. Well, some people wanted to be first, but like we got to a point where like we really wanted to wait until they were like 13. But once every one of their friends had phones and they started missing out on conversations and so, it was hard. So I don't love it.
So did you find that was about the year it blew up? 12, like, did they all get them the same year?
It's a self-fulfilling thing. Is like once the first few do it, then the next everybody starts snowballing. And they had iPads before, but they were just Wi-Fi. It's not like they
kids have that too.
Yeah, they could like FaceTime with them. And then once they were in middle school when that happened, it actually became very, we had all the screen time functionality on there. So they get limited apps and limited time and all that stuff. They couldn't download any apps without permission. They couldn't any of that stuff. But it does become very, like, my daughter texted me, make sure I pick her up from practice. Like they once they start coordinating their own social lives, the phone becomes like super helpful. And we put this app, Life 360, on their phones, so I know where they are all the time, and I get like an alert when they arrive at school, when they leave school, and sort of like all that stuff.
Oh, that's cool. Life 360.
Life 360 for free. There's a free tier that lets you do that kind of stuff. So I think it got to, we had spent a lot of time talking about internet safety and prepping them for, like, you're going to see things that aren't super cool, right? We should talk about it if something's scary or confusing, you know, all those things. And then did the best that we can at the beginning. We told them we were going to read text messages. And so they knew. So it was never a surprise. Like at night, they don't sleep with their phone. Even to this day, they're not allowed to sleep with phones in their bedrooms. So like they have to go plug them in, and then they're motivated to get out of bed in the morning so they can go get their phone.
Well, do you feel, I think that's amazing, and this is all very probably helpful for Alex and myself, but I think that it's important to know they are gone without any screens for 7 weeks
at
their
camp,
overnight
camp.
That's got to help.
No screens, and they don't miss it at all. I mean, maybe they don't think about it at all. To wrap up the TikTok part of it, one of the ongoing jokes that my wife and I have had for the last two summers, but haven't done, is their phones are here at home while they're away. And so we're like, let's get their phones and go into their TikTok accounts and make a bunch of TikTok videos of us doing like the stupid dances. And then all their friends are going to see that. It's going to be mortifying. But there's nothing they can do about it because for 7 weeks, those videos would have been of me doing dance. But we're big talkers. We never actually did it. Maybe next year.
Probably a good idea.
Maybe next year.
That is funny. As a new marketing campaign, these summer camps, sleepaway summer camps, should just advertise themselves as phone detox.
Yeah.
You know, phone rehab.
Some camps allow those devices. I'm glad that ours doesn't. Anyway, Alex, we've kept you now for quite a while. And do you have anything you want to plug before we wrap up?
Well, thinking this is going to be a month from now, so I will be plugging something into the future here.
Spoiler alert. Yeah.
Right. No, I'm saying that like that's a little harder ask here. Feel free to read any of my stuff. It's on CNBC.com. You can Google Alex Sherman and it will come up, or just search it in the search box there. For those people that actually still have cable TV, I'm on CNBC usually a couple times a week, but I never know exactly what time. So you just kind of have to throw it on in the background, turn the sound down or whatever. And if my image comes on, you can turn it up for a few minutes. So I'll plug those two things. Please read the Disney story. I actually, even though this will be many days down the road now, I did a podcast today. It's an episode of The Town, which is a Ringer podcast owned by Bill Simmons.
Nice.
So I did that actually like earlier this morning. And I talk about that Disney story on that. So feel free to listen to that, even if it's a couple weeks old.
You're about to get sick of talking about that story.
Yes, I am. And I've got one more that I'm going to do in 20 minutes on the Ankler. So that'll be out too.
Enjoy it. One quick question for me. How do you know Ashley Albert? I did my due diligence, and I checked up Facebook.
Wow.
Friends.
Okay. I barely know her. I met her at a party years ago.
Everyone has met Ashley Albert at a party.
Yes, she invented the matzah, right?
The matzah. It's like more of like the matzah, like as a sort of snack. Yeah. Yeah. Yep.
Yeah. Right.
And she has her shuffleboard company.
Did she adopt a child or something? Or maybe wow. I'm wrong on that. I don't know. I might be wrong on that.
No, you're probably right. I haven't spoken to her in maybe 5 or 6 years.
It's been even longer for me. I like met her one time or two times or something. Okay. And that was the end of it. Yeah. I don't really know her.
She's good peeps. She's good peeps. We'll have to make sure I tag her so she sends her love. Alex, it's really nice to meet you. I'm a big fan, and I'll keep reading your stuff, and I'll look for you on the CNBC, and we'll see you around. We have some mutual interests, so maybe I'll see you.
And maybe in New Jersey, you'll run into each other. Certainly on the set of the Bob and Bob movie.
I'm just curious. Before I leave, have Corey, Bev, and Lenny done the podcast?
No. And Corey, Bev, and Lenny are my sister, mother, and father, respectively. We are going to get
wait
the
a
moms.
Second. Matt, did we discuss the fact that my father's name was Lenny?
We did not discuss that.
Oh, my God. That's crazy.
So, that is kind of crazy. So, you know, Bev is definitely going to be a guest. We're going to do an episode with the moms, Dave's mom and my mom. Corey, I'm sure, would love to be a guest, but that's a hard pass because we're very competitive and she's not getting, she's not allowed. Unless we're having a podcast about roast beef and lobster rolls, my dad is probably not overly interested. Although, you never know.
Lobster,
clam chowder. Today's episode, clam chowder. All the best chowders on the East Coast. That's what we'll talk about. Chicken fingers and chowder.
Get in your magic box, Matt.
That's what it is. Alex, thank you for taking the time to chat with us.
My pleasure. Thanks for inviting me.
Have a great day.
Shana Tova, Alex, if you believe in
this. Shana Tova. All
right. Bye, Alex. Thanks.
Take care, brother. Yes. Nice meeting you.
Likewise.
So,
Alex Sherman,
that was awesome. I am floored by the fact that your father's name is Lenny. My dad's name was Leonard Lenny. We knew him around the house as Lenny.
Middle name? Let's see how crazy this really is.
Did not have one. My brother nor I have one. But if he had a middle name, it would have been probably something like Shlomo.
No, that wasn't.
I'm just kidding. Let's see. Lenny, maybe like Barry? Probably like maybe like a Barry or a Bernie.
So Barry is my father-in-law, but you've Martin. Is my dad.
Maybe. Okay.
Alex is great. Do you think, I was having this conversation the other day with a friend about AI in general. And then of course it got me going on like a thought exercise. Has there ever been anything else where 5 years ago people were like, AI is going to be the coolest thing. Just wait. And now it's starting to feel like it's turned where like AI, it's like Cyberdyne in the Terminator. Like the worst nightmares are coming true. Like now it's actually scary. And I'm trying to think if there's been anything else in my lifetime that you anticipated. And then because it was like an exciting thing and then it becomes reality and it's like the opposite. It's like electric cars are cool. They're going to be coming in the future. And then they show up and you're like, you know what? They are cool. AI is not having the same moment, I don't think.
Yeah, that's a really good question. I'm racking my brain. I think that cell phones, mobile phones, were something that was like we were looking forward to, and there's a lot of people now that wish they weren't invented.
Right.
But
what would you do? Just think about like if you couldn't.
I can't. Do you ever Google watch it? Movies? In TV shows, and they're like holding something in the scene, and you're like, "Oh, they're about to text somebody," and you realize, "Wait a second, that takes place in 1923. Right. Why would they be holding a phone?"
Yeah, it's a like just the idea of having that one hasn't resonated for me like the AI one only because like the value of being able to Google something or you know have access to that much information. I was just thinking like the simplest things. I'm going for a walk and I like maybe want to go see a movie tonight. And what movies are playing? Well, I don't know.
We all had newspapers and we carried them under our arm.
Yep. In a bathrobe.
Or a back pocket. Yep. In our bathrobe.
Yep.
I don't know. This is a very, it's an interesting time. I have faith in humanity. I'm not completely given up yet. Look, how about this? How about AI for sport events? Like you're not actually watching humans. You're watching robots that look like humans, but there's no sort of, I mean, what if you're a big sports fan, would you be sitting in the stand spending $350 for field side seats watching, you know, maybe?
Right.
But I don't think it's going to be as visceral of an experience. It can't be.
You want to hear something crazy?
What?
Listen to this. I'm going to explain after what you're hearing. Hold on, I got to turn up the volume.
I'm hearing your volume going up.
I'm going to turn up the volume.
That's what I hear.
This is my volume on my phone. Ready?
Yeah, ready.
That pod is the best.
Did that sound like me?
It one more time. It did, but I want to hear it from the top.
And I'm going to write, "Hello, my name is Matt, and I love Dad Pot." Ready?
"Hello, my name is Matt, and I love Dad Pod."
That's my phone using my voice and AI to read. It's an accessibility feature that I was playing with, but it allows me to type in, "Dave Shalansky is an actor."
Dave Shalansky is an actor.
See, Dave Shalansky doesn't exactly know how to do it, but like.
No, you can certainly, it's, I would say that's 100% Matt Brand, but it's not Matt Brand.
No, if you weren't talking to me at the same time, just depending on what the phrases were, you could probably get away with. I went through the phone and I recorded a whole bunch of, it gave you a lot of statements to read, and then it took like a night to sort of profile my voice. And now it's for accessibility. This is actually sounds like a good use for people who can't verbalize they all the time. That so like over time if you could find a way to record your voice, then it's you, it's your likeness. But
wow,
that's
a really valid point, because it actually makes me a bit emotional to think. For those people who are sort of, sorry, I get emotional when it comes to this sort of thing, who know sort of that maybe they're having a disability, or yep, maybe they're starting to lose faculties or something, yep, and they can do this and they can communicate to, yep, their family or children. Absolutely.
It's not so, all bad, right?
It's not all bad, man. And
it's scary, though.
It's scary, but I mean, that's, again, like with anything that's invented, there's going to be people that innately are going to use it for bad. Like the deep fake, there are people in this country who believe in the orange man, and they think that everything he's saying is true.
Yeah.
And there are people there are people watching videos that have been created by people of him saying shit.
Yep.
Or even worse, of the good guys saying shit.
Yep.
And saying horrible stuff.
Yeah.
It's scary, but yeah, so I don't want to leave it on a down note.
No, let's. So I'll give you a fun thing. We had a recent guest, Liz Carroll, and I should tell you that yesterday, Liz returned. We had talked about this when we recorded with her.
Oh yeah,
Liz came back to my house yesterday for our first training session after a 2.5 month summer hiatus, and she had all new programs for me, and it was great. It's great to see her again in person.
Amazing.
We did not box as as requested, but it was a great time.
And I was going to say, you look refreshed, and there's plenty of oxygen going through your system right now.
Plenty of oxygen. I'm full of oxygen.
And I will say that I listened from beginning to end that episode.
Yeah.
I don't listen to our podcast every time, but like for some reason it drew me in. Her, you know what it was? I can tell you what it is. Yeah. She was a little bit like, it's clearly not her realm. Like that's not like, this is not her thing. So she has no sense of entertainment whatsoever, right? There's no sense of like raconteur. There's no, she's just telling her story. She is who she is and she's wonderful. And it was like, I think it was great that you and I were playing off of that and like heading her in the right direction. She's a real deal. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
Like she's a real person.
She is a real
person.
Not
that like any of our guests weren't real people.
No, but like this is what I like. We have a good mix of people who are perhaps more comfortable in an entertainment style setting.
Yeah.
And some people who haven't done a lot of that, but they're real people, all of them, and they have real fun and interesting things to talk about. But it was, I mean, she kicked my ass yesterday. That's for sure.
Did she bring the, what's she call it? The rope things?
Those ropes. No, I forget what
the gallow, like something with a boat.
They're
galley ropes.
He's
looking, he's looking it up on his AI machine.
Exercise ropes, right? What are they called? Battle ropes.
Battle. That makes sense. Yeah, battle.
No, she did not. We used my own equipment this time. But she developed a couple of new programs for me, and now today she actually sent me a follow-up with what my exercise plan is for all 7 days of each week. So It was great. It was great to see her again.
Do you, what is your, what's your overall, and we can sort of conclude, but what's your overall goal, Matt? Is it sort of from our first episode where you are just looking for wellness, not necessarily like goal in terms of weight, goal in terms of strength, yeah, but just overall healthiness, right?
So yeah, at this point, like the whole thing started with lowering cholesterol, but now as I've grown to really enjoy the exercise part of it, I want to make sure I'm doing it right so I don't hurt myself. And so having a real, whether it's a personal trainer or somebody that you find on, you know, like on YouTube or you find online, like having a real program, I learned, is much better from somebody who knows what they're doing, is much better than trying to piece it together yourself. But my goal is to get stronger and to be healthy. Generally, I don't have there is no weight goal for me. Maintain or gain, not the other way.
Right.
But the, I like the exercising. I want to make sure I'm doing it right. And so to have, and I know I'm getting stronger. Like I can tell that I'm getting stronger. I can lift more. I can do more without hurting myself. So like some That's of it's great. Form and some of it's, you know, weight and all that stuff. I love
well,
it.
Well, my money is on you when you walk run your race against Ben Portnoy next
That's
summer.
It. When Ben and I race, thank you. Thank you for the vote of confidence. I could have used it when we recorded with Ben, but that's like...
You can take that and you can put that, because we haven't dropped the Ben episode yet.
Yeah,
I'll edit and say in. Like, my vote's on you.
Yeah, I'm going to... That's going to...
Bench. No, my vote's on you, Matt.
Thank you. Perfect. Perfect. All right. Should we get
All right, man.
Here?
Happy New Year. Shana Tova. I can't wait. I cannot tell you how much I look forward to doing these.
This is great.
And every day I worry that you're going to be like, you know what? I'm kind of done.
I enjoy it. This is too much fun.
Send my best to your lovely family.
Likewise, do the same.
And
we'll see you at the next one.
We'll see you at the next one. TBD.
On the count of eight. Three.
Four.
Eight.
One.